Hello all, welcome to Up the podcast made by the fans, for the fans. Grab yourself a drink, put your feet up and listen in. And by the way, there could be some strong language.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Up the Poshcast. That was the season that was a pretty unremarkable one, unfortunately, finishing with a pretty unremarkable match against Rotherham. Posh went down 2-1 at the New York Stadium. We're going to go through that game tonight. We're going to talk about Ferguson's post-match comments and a little bit on contracts as well, which Peterborough continue to seem to struggle to get players to sign. Tonight, I've got Harry joining me, I've got Lods, I've got Dell, and I've got Max, and I'm John. And Harry, we're going to start talking about the Rotherham game. What was your take on it? How did you find it?
I quite like that it, in its own way, was 90 minutes that summed up 46 games, where we had moments of playing well, surrounded by a load of individual sloppy errors, an inability to finish chances, and just honking goals conceded. It was a microcosm of what we've just had to deal with for the last 9 months. I'm glad it's over, and we can hopefully reset over the summer. There's no doubt that this team has, as I said, flashes of brilliance. And the opening goal was great, and there were moments where we had chances, where we put Lindgren through, although he didn't finish it, or Tayo hitting the post in the, whatever it was, 89th minute, came from well-worked play. We're still capable of that for 5-10 minutes in most games, and occasionally more than that in some games. But it's surrounded by so many defensive issues that we have to sort out this summer. Any team that has a semblance of a plan to attack us usually succeeds at least once during the game. And I thought Rotherham were good value for their win. There's no way they should have scored their first or second goal if we'd been switched on defensively and there hadn't been individual errors contributing to the missed headers both times, really. I'm glad to see that was the final chapter of a pretty sorry book that has been the 24-25 season.
Yes, yeah, it's a shame in a way because we took so many fans and the support I thought was great. Was it 1,200 in the end or something like that? And there was a real party atmosphere. There was lots of fancy dress. The fans were fully behind them. I think Fergie made a point of bringing the players over to the fans before the game to sort of just absorb it all in. And then Fergie himself came over just before the players came out and clapped the fans as well. And then with Odo scoring in the first 20 seconds or whatever it was, that party atmosphere, I genuinely thought at that point, wow, we could go on and score 3 or 4 here, put in the performance that was needed to cancel out the rubbish performance they put in on Wednesday night against Mansfield. And then from 30 seconds onwards, it just went back to how it was before, didn't it? There's not really a lot of ways to describe how we played, really. It's just so flat and just so consistent across the whole season now. These players haven't put in what was required for us to have any confidence that they're going to do well next season. Unfortunately, I don't think there's a single Posh fan out there that thinks that that team that played against Rotherham will finish anywhere near the top of the league next season. There was a couple of positives in there, and all round, I think they played a lot better than they did on Wednesday night against Mansfield. But I think all that yesterday provided us was the confidence that we need investment into this squad and we need some signings to improve what we currently have.
Do you know what? I think yesterday was one of those games where we took an early lead and I generally thought my 4-0 prediction was coming in. I thought, wow, it's coming. And then, are we being too critical on the game because of the result, or are we generally looking at the performance and thinking, yeah, it was really shit? Because I don't know if I'd switched off by the end of the season there and thinking it weren't actually that bad. there were some moments of decent play, and there was some shit. But we've had that week in, week out. But yeah, it was always nice to get the early goal. Is that one of the quickest goals of the season? Well, it's definitely one of our quickest goals of the season. I don't know about in the Football League, but yeah, or is it that I just thought, you know what, this is what we've accepted now, that we are shit, and we thought it was a decent game. I don't know, but I'm glad the season's finished, but I want to start again quite quickly, you know. That's quite warped and whatever. I can't really talk too much about the actual game itself without going into the players, which we'll do in a minute. I don't even know how to describe that game yesterday. Was it okay? Was it great? Was it shit? I think it's had its moments all over, so I don't even know what to say.
In answer to your question, Del, I agree with Fergie. It was horrible apart from the first 5 minutes. But, I mean, what was I expecting? Nothing more as soon as I saw the team lineup. It was a time for those players to step up and show that they're good enough to play in League One. And none of them did. With an exception of maybe Tayo Edun, who I thought could play well, I think the other 10, they don't belong at this level. That's the sad fact of the matter. I genuinely, truly believe as a top League One side, none of them make a team in the top six out of that starting lineup, which is pretty sad to see where we are, you know, without our better players. There's just not enough depth in the squad. And I actually thought we were lucky that it was 2-1 in the end. I thought Rotherham were probably worth more than that. I know we hit the post right in the last dying embers of the game, but other than that, it was just waves and waves of pressure coming from them. They had 22 shots. And I think it's worth reminding everyone that this is a Rotherham team that are pretty average. They're not exceptional in League One. They're basically bang in the middle of the table. They weren't many points ahead of us. And yeah, we got schooled. And the most frustrating thing is that it's just a bit predictable. I literally watched two set pieces yesterday, and I put in our group chat, well, we're going to concede a set piece. And lo and behold, we conceded a set piece, because I've seen it all season. Players not winning headers, players not marking properly, players giving the ball away in dangerous areas. It's the same errors just being repeated. And I don't need to watch these players again and again and again to see anything different, because they're not offering me anything different. They're not even, you know, we've all been critical of a lot of that team that started yesterday. But none of them are doing anything to change our minds. I mean, even Oddo, who scored the goal, for instance, he played okay yesterday. But is that performance going to change my mind that he's a top League One winner? No, not really. I thought his goal was simple. They showed him on the inside and he finished it relatively well. But beyond that, did he have any impact on the game? I just feel like there's a lot of these players that Fergie gave the opportunity to over the last three games of the season, and pretty much every single one of them failed their audition for next season. And it's just a really rubbish way to end what's been a rubbish season. I said last night, it's my least favourite League One season, and nothing, you know, sometimes you sleep in it and you're less angry and you think, oh no, there was positives. Yeah, Wembley was good. Wembley will live long in the memory, but it was such a shit season and they've just served up so much dross, and that was another dross game, dross performance. And yeah, like I say, I think we were fortunate not to be on the end of another Tonkin like we were at Lincoln or something like that, to be honest, in the end.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think I don't really know where to go, because I just feel like we repeat ourselves on here almost every week now, in terms of these players aren't good enough. And that's the truth. Since Barnsley, we've been giving these players a real opportunity now to go and prove why they should be playing for Peterborough United. And that's the truth. That's what it felt like. Fergie said that his aspiration was to get as many points as he possibly could, but the lineups probably say otherwise. And at the end of the day, what we wanted to do was show that we had a crop of talent that maybe the fans and even the management have underestimated, put them into an 11 and let them perform. And really, they should be blood hungry. They should be playing like they have a future on the line. They should be busting a bollock, as Delaware says. And the fact of the matter was, they didn't. They haven't done that. They have done nothing to impress me. And I'm easily impressed. And they did nothing to impress me, a lot of them. And it's really made me, usually I go into the summer super excited. It's actually relatively bleak. I don't feel any sort of excitement. The only excitement I feel is thank God that shit show is over. I'm so excited that I don't have to go every Saturday and watch that. I love watching this football club, don't get me wrong, but this season has been so bad that I'm actually looking forward to a break and resetting over pre-season. We look at how poor this season's been, and I think the performance from a lot of the players sort of epitomise that. It's been very inconsistent, and one of the players haven't really shown as much as being Katongo. And I think as a whole, if we were to pick our most disappointing player of the season, I actually think it'd be him. He came in and everybody was super excited that we'd signed him back after such a successful sort of 6 months or whatever he had from January onwards, when Chiozzo left and he stepped up to the plate. He looked really good. And he came back this season. He's been an absolute shadow of himself. I think he came back and was promised the Ronnie Edwards role. I think that's what he was promised. I think he was going to come back and be that ball-playing centre-half, but it seemed to all go out the window very quickly. And it went back to sort of what Katongo has been this season, and that has been poor and maybe average at a push, but I don't think he's given anything to show that he's been excellent, to be frank, and I don't think we should be trying to go in and sign him next season. Albeit, we have seen what he can do, and that's the only promise of that. So wherever he goes next, there is a player there. It's just, how can you keep him fit, and is he going to be able to play at this level? And who knows now after the injury, because we haven't seen anything to the back end. But I think that inconsistency from like last season to this season just shows how poor it's been and how inconsistent this season's been.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder with Katongo whether it's just not wanting to re-ping his hamstring, which has held him back a bit, to be honest. Moving on to CJ, who, look, those who have already seen the retained list episode will know that I want to keep him as a backup option behind Dornelli or Mills, because he can play both sides. Nothing I saw yesterday suggests to me that he's likely to be a top six starting fullback for Peterborough United or for anyone else for that matter. He's okay at quite a few different things. He's inconsistent in his runs going forward. I think he lacks the vision, even now having been in this system for 5 months, to accurately build up when he receives the ball in the opposition side of the pitch. What's the angle of his run, or where's his next pass? Where does he need to move to off the ball? I think he's limited in all those areas, to be honest with you. And he is reasonable at defending. I don't know if he's, you know, the kind of guy who can mark Ephraim Mason-Clark out of a game or the equivalent week in, week out. I think he can do that sometimes. I'm really hoping he kicks on, to be honest. And I hope he looks at how he's performed this season and says to himself, I'm at a club that is trying to be top six consistently. I've got to work on several areas of my game, both defensively and offensively, to get up to that level. Because, as I say, right now, he's probably decent cover. And that is it so far on the showing that we've seen.
Another one who really struggled yesterday is George Nevitt. And I always feel a bit bad, I guess a bit harsh going in on George Nevitt, because he's so young. I mean, is he 19, 18? And you feel like he still looks so young as well, like structurally and facially. And he looks like a school kid out there. But he is now a concern, isn't he? I don't think there's any two ways around it. He might be very young, and I guess the upside is that occasionally he looks decent on the ball and he's pretty tall, but he looks so far off the level that it's quite painful to watch him when he's exposed to it. And I'm not sure we're actually doing him any favours at this point, putting him in the team, because he's not a League One footballer. We use the competition winner remark a lot to like disparage players. It's quite a common one in football parlance, isn't it? But Nevitt genuinely looks like a competition winner out there. There was one moment where the ball's rolling to him and he knocks it out of play with a terrible first touch for his own corner for Rotherham. And you're just like, what are you doing, mate? He nearly gave away a penalty. He set one of their strikers up to go through on goal. It was just a shambles from start to finish. And he needs a loan. He needs to go out. I'm just not convinced he's ever going to make it at this level because I don't know if he's mobile enough. For one, the biggest issue is he is so slow. Like, it's just so evident that every time the striker turns him, he either has to foul him or he is just so far behind them by after about 10 yards that he can never get back. And look, we can give these players time, and sometimes you see a Ronnie Edwards come into the team at 18 and he looks like he's capable of doing it almost immediately. I get that's rare with a centre-back, but for Nevitt to make it this level, he has to have so much improvement within him. And something like speed, how much can you actively coach speed? Like, yeah, you might be able to trim a second off a 100-metre time if they've got really good sprint coaching, but is he ever going to be fast enough to play at League One or hopefully higher if that's the ambition of the club? The more I see him, the more I doubt it. And yeah, it's just got to the point with him where I almost actively feel sorry for him watching him because he's being put in at a level. It's like playing me in League One. You're going to feel sorry for me watching me because I ain't going to cope. And it really looks like he just can't cope. His confidence must be rock bottom right now. I want him in the summer just to go back to the conference, go back to the National League, try and get his confidence back up. And then we'll bring him back after that year and see where he ends up, because I really don't think this season's done him much good because he's just been exposed to a level so far beyond his ability that, yeah, I'm very sympathetic towards him. But, you know, that investment, I'm not seeing too many signs that are encouraging that it's going to pay off.
Okay, so one thing that we do get questioned quite a lot about on this pod is that we continue to criticise players left, right and centre. I think I've already read somewhere that we're planning for relegation next year. So I'm going to turn it around and be really positive. Do you know what? Ed George has not had the best of games of late. And I think I'm the only one in our retained list that actually said keep him. And I'm 100% sticking to keep George Nevitt for next season. Yeah, he has got a lot to learn, and yeah, he has got a long way to go. But I am quite confident that he will come good for us. You know, whether or not he's going to be a championship player, or whatever, I'm not sure about that. But I think he's going to come good for us, and I really hope that he does. You know, you mentioned about the pace. Does he really need to have that much pace playing as a centre back? Not necessarily. What I will bring up on yesterday though is the shit that he was being given by Harley Mills. It really did fucking piss me off, if I'm honest, young Mills. Is when was it CJ that fucked up in the middle of the pitch with a header that he should have got, and it sort of then went out, and then when a ball sort of went over short arm keeper Will's hands and is on the back post, Nevitt was coming towards the back post as away from it, and he was the winner. He was the sort of the favourite to get that ball. And then you had Mills that also then come in towards the goal and then went to sort of header it, but he pushed sort of Nevitt out of the way, which you could argue Nevitt was a little bit weak. I get that, but he was in the right place to clear that ball. Mills got in his way from Nevitt to clear it. Anyway, it ended up being a goal. What I didn't like after that is the shit that Mills was giving Nevitt, because I believe in that little passage of play, Mills was in the wrong. Nevitt was in the right position to do the right thing, and he almost did it. He was then pushed out of the way by the defender by the attacker and Mills. That's what I see. But what I'm saying about keeping him, if he has some experienced players around him, like even when we was talking about Hughes, encouraging when he's made a mistake or something, you don't need to see another youngster criticise one of your own players when he was the one that was at fault, in my opinion, on that little passage. Granted, it should have been fucking nowhere near that area in the first place. So, yeah, Nevitt, I think, has got a long way to go, but I'm 100% keeping him for next season. I'm not expecting him to play lots of games. I'm expecting him to be around the team, around the sort of squad, you know, and one of these players that plays in the cup games, etc. And then potentially the season after next is when he comes to shine. But you know, I'm not going to get on his back too much. Yeah, he has had a few sort of bad moments, which have been quite shit. But, you know, I'm all for women. Also, I just want to jump on Will. I don't want to jump on him. I might hurt him, actually, because he's that small. But as we said, we saw yesterday both sides of Will, what we discussed in the sort of the retain list, that fuck is a really good shot stopper. And he did have some really good saves yesterday. Without a doubt, I think one towards the end with his foot, etc., etc. But what is really clear is he's just not tall enough to be a goalkeeper in League One. You know, yet again, he got beat. The one that was in the middle of the goal, seriously, that was so close to him. If his arms were literally just a little bit longer, as in like normal length, I think it could have been 1-1, you know, rather than the 2-1. There's, you know what I mean by that goal, when it was literally clearly in the middle of the goal. So I'm going to stick to what I said about release, Will, because I think he's a good goalkeeper. And I think he'll do a very, very good job in a perhaps lower league. But I don't think he's the right sort of size for League One.
I'm going to move on to the midfield, because I think it was stark opposites in the midfield between O'Brien, Brady and De Havilland. And I'll start with the positive, because Dale's kicked me off on some positive energy. So that's where I'm going to continue. So we're going to go with Dobby. And I actually thought he was really good yesterday. Well, really good is probably an overstatement. I think he was good. And I thought he was okay against Mansfield. Look, we got thumped against Mansfield, but I thought he looked like one of the only players that was trying. And that's all I really wanted to see. And he was linking up really well yesterday in the attack and helping out with defensive duties, which is everything that I really wanted to see. You know, you just want to see these glimmers. And again, this is his first sort of professional stint in League One, and he hasn't probably got the minutes that he probably would have wanted to. But I thought he was good. And I think with a pre-season, he could bed in. He could be a replacement option. I wouldn't really have him as a starting option, I wouldn't have thought. But I thought he showed promise. And we need to strengthen in midfield after losing Kyprianou. But if he's going to put in performances like that, it's not like I'm not going to trust him to bring him on in the 60th minute, in the 70th minute. The trust is there for him to come on and see out a game. The trust is there for him to start a game. Because I think he's been average at most. He's dropped some clangers, of course, but everybody in their first professional season is always going to drop some clangers. The stark opposite was obviously Ryan de Havilland, who I thought had the complete opposite. I thought he was really poor. And that's just the truth of it all, if I'm honest. He was really poor. And I think Ryan de Havilland has been a guaranteed six. Like, it's the banker, right? When you're doing your ratings, Ryan de Havilland, 9 times out of 10, gets a six. He's bang average, and that's the truth. And there was a point where I said, look, I'd much rather reinvest in a Poku replacement. I'd rather reinvest in a striker. I'd rather reinvest in a centre-back than spend money on a midfielder when we could just start de Havilland with Collins. And as average as that'd be to have de Havilland in midfield, I think he does a job.
I'll be honest, I don't really know where I stand on the midfield, because on our retained list episode, I sort of had it in my head that we need to keep one of Donny O'Brien, Brady and Ryan de Havilland and get rid of the other one. And I voted to get rid of O'Brien, Brady and keep de Havilland just based on the consistency. I enjoyed the debate that we had on the episode of things he does well and things he does wrong. And Max is right. He is just a 6 out of 10 performer, isn't he? He's just very average. One thing I noticed against Mansfield with both of them that happened again yesterday at Rotherham was when the ball is in the wide area, when the opposition have got the ball in the wide areas, both of the midfielders go right across to the pitch and get dragged out with the ball and leave so much space in behind them. And we got played through basically very easily at Mansfield and again at Rotherham. And when Kyprianou and Collins are playing with each other, I know we haven't seen it much this season because of Kyprianou's injury. But last season, they were so solid in that role, weren't they? There was very little went through them. And I think that's the difference between both of them and a midfielder at that level. The intelligence of just knowing where to be. I think midfield is probably the hardest position to play on the pitch. You've obviously got that 360-degree angle where you need to know everything around you. but just knowing where to be and sort of anticipating where the ball's going to go and picking up the little detail of how the opposition, go through transitions through the pitch, and knowing how to apply yourself into that position to stop that from happening. And I don't think De Havilland or Dene Brian Brady have that. And I don't think they ever will, if I'm being honest with you. I'm hoping we keep Archie Collins into next season, and I'm hoping we sign a solid midfielder to play alongside him. And I'm hoping that we have a decent backup to play with one of Brian Brady and De Havilland. But if we go in with them two being two of our three main midfielders, I think we're really, really going to struggle to stop opposition playing through us. I think there's going to be a lot of open games next season if we can't sort that midfield out.
I'll go on to the wingers, who are obviously Abraham, Oddo and Tayo in a makeshift role until the substitution happened. Although Tayo, I think we'll go into properly later because we want to tie it into his contract situation. I mean, Oddo, what a great goal. You know, perfect touches to go round the defender and nail it into the bottom corner, precisely like he did against Charlton at home. He also had great goals against Crawley. He's got something there when it comes to that close to his feet dribbling, which he can do. And you know what? In the second half, he also did it coming into the box two or three times. But the problem is that every other area of his game needs so much work, no more obvious than his passing, where he consistently telegraphs where he's going with it. And he got intercepted multiple times in the build-up. Particularly in that first half, not long after he'd scored. Just so, so frustrating. I was stood right behind the goal yesterday, as in literally on row A. And I realised in the second half when we were attacking towards our goal, Oddo does not look up at all when he is dribbling. So his eyes are squarely placed on the ball throughout the entire process of his dribbles. If he's going to become a better passer and indeed crossing it into the box once he's got himself into that decent position, he's got to look up in the process of his dribbling, because I think it was a bit aimless. The reason that his crosses, I call them crosses, they're more across the ground, you know, passed across to the penalty spot area or attempted to. The reason they didn't do anything was because it is a bit of a hit and hope. He's hoping that someone is in the middle, because the rest of the time his eyes are squarely on the ball. It's hard, of course it is, but he's got to add that if he's going to be a winger that is capable of being top six again, which is what we want.
I'll tell you who else needs to improve if we're going to get to top six. Chris Conclarke. We've got this far without mentioning him, and I think that sums up Chris Conclarke's performance. Just another anonymous display. I literally don't remember him doing anything actively positive on that game. And I think the most worrying thing for Conclarke is that he was hooked after an hour. I believe it was for James Dornelli. Correct me if I'm wrong there. But we shifted formation and put Donny O'Brien Brady in the 10 and Dornelli into midfield. That is a damning indictment from Fergie on what he thought of that performance, I think. You're playing a right-back out of position in defensive midfield to get Chris Conclarke off the pitch. And, yeah, for me, that was a signal, and I will now be very surprised if Conclarke is not on the transfer list when our retain list comes out. I think these three games, and I said it before these three games started, they were massive for Conclarke. And unfortunately, he has badly, badly failed his audition. I don't think there's been too many collectively worse performers in the team over these last three games than him. It's not so much that he stands out like a George Nevitt in sort of like looking terrible throughout the game or completely out of his depth, but he stands out in the fact that he's just anonymous. He just doesn't get involved. You see Mothersill or Randall in the 10 and they're all constantly looking for the ball. The play's constantly going through them. You see Conclarke in the 10 and how many touches did he have? How many meaningful passes did he make? Just nothing. It's troubling. I really want to like Chris Conclarke because well, I don't even know why I want to like Chris Conn-Clarke. I think it's because of what I saw when he was in non-league, and you saw that player and you think, well, that looks a player that I'd like to watch play football. But we've seen very little moments of even spark with him. And yeah, I think that substitution probably was a signal that he's going on the list. And I would be very shocked if he's still a Peterborough United player next season now.
Just before I move on to play, I want to talk about the substitutions, as you say, yesterday, and the formation was just baffling. I just didn't understand a lot of it. It was like the previous week where Max said, pick a number, pick a thing, and that's what position you're playing in. Because that's how it felt like at times yesterday. As you say, Donnelly playing in midfield. You had CJ playing in midfield, and it just wasn't right. But moving on from all that, I'm going to end on a positive, because we brought on a young lad called Andre Chagunda, I believe is how you pronounce it. And
One more time, Del. One more time for the fans. They want to hear it.
Andre Chagunda. Yeah, I think that was right. So
I think that is right.
That is how much he impressed me. I even got his fucking name right. But no, to be fair, he come on. And I like the fact that he was running them. He was running the players, and he was trying to make something of a nothing game, really. And that is the attitude that you want to see. He could have just come on and done the simple touches, click the ball, pass it back to the ball, so he didn't get picked up for making a mistake. But he had some bollocks on him, and he come across that, I'm going to try and impress. I'm going to try and show you that I need to be in the squad for next season. And he wasn't scared of making a mistake. He was in it. And I know it was only a 25 minutes half hour cameo appearance, but what I saw in the first team from yesterday, I was quite impressed. So definitely want to look out for next season. I don't think he'll be a starter like Nevitt. I think he'll be one of these that will sort of show a bit more around the squad and, you know, in cup games. But yeah, that's the sort of attitude that I'd like to see. Somebody that will come in, have a go, run at attackers, you know. And when was the last time we really had somebody that runs at attackers down the wing? I know we say Odo a little bit, but I was impressed with him yesterday. Good lad, Andre Chagunda. Let's see what you got for us next season.
I was also impressed with Joe Andrews. Actually, way more impressed than I was expecting to be. A guy who's played for Chippenham Town, who could actually trap a ball when it came at him under pressure, which is more than we can say for some of our other midfielders. And he got himself into a really good position for the... Unfortunately, it was a blocked shot, but in the build-up to that, he was great. I don't know if anyone else noticed this, he has the exact same gait as Joel Randall. He runs and passes in precisely the same way. But honestly, with a lot more incision from what I saw. I know it's 20 minutes. I know it's in a game that meant nothing. And fundamentally, it was against the team that's finished, 17th, 16th? I can't remember where Rotherham finished exactly. But getting my stocks in early on Joe Andrews. It's a shame we've already recorded our retained list episode, because we didn't comment on him. He hadn't played for the first team. Because it's what I would have said alone, but now I'm thinking, I haven't run the first team squad next year.
Just briefly, I think Andrews and Andre had is exactly what we wanted. The players that are playing now, that's the type of performances that we wanted to see, because I think both of them came on and worked their absolute socks off, and it looked like they were playing for a future here. I don't think we can say the same about some of the players that have played from Barnsley onwards, in terms of, you know, John's spoken about auditions. And really, another big audition has been Gustav, because it's been very hit or miss, hot or cold with me and Gustav. I came on and I had a bit of a rant. I was mainly a bit upset that I think Bradley was leaving, and I'd be really impressed that Bradley gives us something different. I don't think Gustav gives us a different style of play. I think Gustav likes to make the runs in behind, very similar to how Ricky does. Now, yesterday, what I really enjoyed was watching this relationship that had sparked completely out of nowhere between Edun and Gustav. And Eden was doing an excellent job in finding Gustav. I saw enough from Gustav for me to actually think, okay, maybe let's give this project a go. We spent a lot of money on him. Let's give him a preseason and let's play him up front. But we need to sign weapons on the wing that can help him. And one of those could be Adun. Now, I said on our retain list, Dan Ferguson has said that he probably won't be signing on, I believe. So we'll get into the contract in just a moment. But for me, if we can't find a winger that can pick out, if Gustav's going to be our project, we can't find a winger that can pick out his runs like Tao did yesterday, then I'd be doing everything to probably keep him here. I don't necessarily think he's a replacement to the entertainment factor that we got from Poku and from Mason Clark. But I think if he can find Gustav and Gustav can improve on his finishing and get more systematically improved over pre-season, I think there's a relationship there that we can really build on. And sometimes it's not about the individual quality at this level. It's about the relationships that your players have, especially in the final third. And if our striker and our winger really understand each other, then we can just build an attacking system around them. And he's already here. So, look, maybe my opinion's changed. After Cobblers, I didn't want to see him in a shirt again. I really didn't. But yesterday he came on with a real point to prove, especially after his poor performance against Mansfield. He came with a point to prove, and I thought he was fantastic. I believe he was our man of the match. I gave him my highest rating, and I thought he was absolutely fantastic.
Well, Peterborough United have more than one problem, but one big problem is the fact that we mentioned Tyo Eden there, and Max talked about it. Fergie saying that he won't sign. Now, we're not going to, I don't think as a collective, we're going to slag off the decision that, you know, we're not going to be too desperate for Tyo Eden to sign. I think a lot of us here and potentially all of us here said we wouldn't re-sign Tyo Eden. However, it goes to say that he was probably our best player yesterday. And it just exposes a wider spread problem across Posh that we can go back maybe three seasons now and nobody is signing a new contract to this football club with the exception of Joel Randall. Now, just as a brief list of players that we've tried to get on new contracts that haven't signed: Burrows, Ward, Poku, Kiprianu, Ricky J. Jones, Tyo Eden, Malik Mothersill, Harley Mills. Both the last two still could sign, but obviously they haven't yet. And the club's intimated that they have been offered deals. I don't think I mentioned Archie Collins either, who also I believe is running out of contract. So this is troubling because we're now starting to lose players for less than their values. You know, we're going to see tribunal fees for Ricky J. Jones, for Kwame Poku. Kiprianu is going to go for a free. And if we're not bringing in those transfer fees, then where does the money come from? It's becoming a worrying issue. So we're going to talk that and how Posh can solve it. And how worried are you, Lods, that this is now becoming a really big problem for Posh? What do we need to do to keep these players at the football club?
Yeah, I wasn't actually that concerned about not getting players to sign new deals prior to sort of the last few months, because they use us as a stepping stone. That is our transfer policy. We get them in, they play for a couple of years, they overperform, we sell them on for big money. They don't need to sign a new deal with us if they can do that. We're happy we get the money, they're happy they get the big money move. That's Peterborough United's identity. So some of the players you've mentioned there have done that. I've got no problem with that. Kwame Poku, for example. If Birmingham have put 30 grand a week on the table, like they allegedly have, there is no way that we're ever going to get him to sign a new deal. It's just simple as. The reason I'm a bit concerned now is Tyo Eden. What has he done to prove that he can go on and play a higher level and go and get a big money move elsewhere? What is the reason why he doesn't want to stay with us? Is it money? I don't know. I think it's probably a little bit embarrassing from us. Obviously, this contract thing's become a bit of a running joke now, but it's a bit embarrassing that one week we've said, oh, we've offered a contract to Tyo Eden, and the fans all get excited. Oh, we're going to keep him. We're trying to plan him in. How does that affect Harley Mills, for example? We've played him on the right wing. Maybe we're going to change position. And then all of a sudden, oh, yeah, he's not signing anymore. He doesn't want to stay. And it's like, if they didn't come out and say that we've offered him a new deal, we wouldn't have this debate as fans. if they just said at the end of yesterday's game, oh, Teo Edin isn't signing, or put it on the retained list, which as we're recording hasn't even been released yet, I don't think there would be as much uproar, because as long as we're kept in the dark, we don't need to know what happens behind closed doors. But now, because we've raised it out there in the public domain, there's this big concern that we don't have the financial pull to get these players on a decent sized contract to keep them at the club. And how does that affect our signings? Is it the same for if we want to pull a high performer in League Two this summer, for example, and sign them and say, you played really well in League Two last season, come play for us for a season or two, you'll get a big money move to the Championship, like we have done in the past. What's stopping another League One team doing that can pay them almost double what we pay? There's teams in our league that are probably similar sized or even smaller that are paying higher wages than what we are, according to websites that are out there. And I know they might not be legit, and I know Dara says that our wages are higher than what they actually are. But I think one of the problems is that it's highly incentivized by bonuses, where they need to perform well to earn the required amount of money that we're offering them. And if they're not playing, like, again, use Poku. He's barely played this season because of injury. How is he receiving his goal bonuses or his appearance bonuses or his assist bonuses if he's not playing? He's injured, he's not playing, and he's not getting paid properly. I think he's probably on, what, like $3,000 a week? For a player of that calibre, he could be playing for Stockport and be earning $10,000 a week, as a good example there. I am getting concerned now, yeah. I think our transfer policy that's been so successful for us in the last 10, 15, 20 years has now been found out by other clubs. Other clubs are doing the same thing. We've now got a lot of competition when it comes to signing players and keeping players. And I do worry that if we don't adapt and overcome this, we will struggle to compete in League One going forward.
I think, more sympathetic to DMACC and the club as a whole than most are when it comes to this situation, for a few reasons. So one is, and Lodge, you already mentioned this towards the beginning, that we are a stepping stone club, and that is part of the appeal for these players. And we have to wrap that in the context that, unfortunately, the timing with a few of these contracts has meant that we couldn't offer that real 1 year before end of contract stepping stone for players that we would have done in the past. Why was the contract situation like it was, where you've got Hector, Ricky, Poku all ending at the same time and a similar thing happening last summer? Well, it's because of COVID. When COVID hit, we had to make sure that we weren't laden with 4 or 5 year contracts. They had to all be 3 years, basically, because who knew how long it was going to last for, whether there was going to be no money coming into the club. So you had a load of players all on similar ending times for their contracts. And on top of that, there was no way of knowing at that point, when we were going through this process of essentially giving ourselves a decent short-term window without overextending ourselves, we had no way of knowing how good some of these players would be. There was no way of knowing how good Ricky would be, or Burrows would be, or Ronnie Edwards would be. And you ended up with this period we've had over the last 18, 24 months, where so many contracts have lapsed, coming out now the other side of that 2021, 2022 period, where we were thinking, what is next? How do we know everything's going back to normal? We don't. One more thing is the financial situation. So we have 10 million revenue a year as a club. If you have 21 players on an average of $3,000 a week, which is obviously not that high, but it's probably ballpark to the average overall, that's a third of all your money straight away just gone. It's like $3.5 million. In reality, our wage bill is bigger than that. You can see this on the financial statements. So we aren't offering a pittance here. We're still spending a decent chunk on players, probably close to $5,000 a week. Maybe not as high as that, maybe close to $4,000 a week average. And I bet there's a few that are on well over $5,000. And as you say, the paper number won't be that high, but the bonuses when they get tacked onto that will be what's causing that number to go up. And with two playoff campaigns in a row, I have no doubt that a few players took home $7,000 or $8,000 a week on average over the course of the season last year or the year before. with all that in mind, I think we need to give the club a bit of sympathy that it is not in the strongest position financially to be able to offer the same that other clubs can. And I think our COVID hangover has hurt us quite a lot because of that financial effect. Going forward from here, the alternative to this is to offer contracts before players are good. So let me ask you this. Do you want to go offer a Chris Clark a four-year contract this summer? Does anyone on this podcast want to do that? They don't, right? Well, if Chris Clark goes and has an absolute belter next year, he's got 1 year left, and we're thinking, do we keep him or not? That's the alternative. We don't think about the other side of the coin often when we have these conversations. That's what I'd round up on that point.
I think, Harry, you make a good point about offering players contracts early, because that's my stance on this. We're quite risk averse, I would say, in the way we hand out contracts. And I do think we could do with being more proactive. Now, you're talking about Chris Clark and offering him a new contract. Clearly, if Chris Clark becomes amazing next season, no one's going to say, well, the club should have offered him a new deal. However, I think there were signs that someone like Kwame Poku was going to become a pretty good player, maybe even 2 years ago. And he could have been offered a new deal at that time. And then you know, give him 4 years, and then you've got that extra security. We get a fee for him this summer. Ultimately, what we're doing now is we're so risk averse, it feels, that we're actually causing ourselves to miss out on millions in transfer fees, I think. And added to that, I have more sympathy with the club for losing players like Hector Kyprianou, who clearly has had championship interest the year before. But I am worried that we can't seem to even... Harley Mills, for instance, should be an instant sign, right? There's just... He's come out of our academy. He's done really well at Wembley. Surely he's not asking for multi-thousands a week. It should be an easy contract. And yet, how long ago did we hear that he's been offered a new deal? And how long has it taken for this deal to go through? I do not understand how we can't get him tied down. I really struggle with that one. And if you're offering, you know, Dornelli the same money that Harley Mills is on, well, Dara came on here and talked about that Charlie needed to learn economics and inflation. Well, can we not use the same argument there? There's been some inflation in the last year. Does Harley Mills not deserve a little bit more than James Dornelli? You can't use that argument against the fans when it suits, but then not to your own wage policy, if you know what I mean. I think even players like Mothersill and Archie Collins, these players they're not elite championship level yet. I think with Mothersill, he might get to championship level, but he's not there yet. And I would think that they are the scale of players that Posh should be able to keep at the club. If we're an ambitious top League One club, which is what we profile ourselves at, let's face it, we're going for promotion again next season. I imagine we'll be the line out of the club. We should be able to keep players like them here. And if we're struggling to keep players like that here, I'm not even talking about your Kwame Pockets, but I think you could probably put Ricky J. Jones in that category. What chance have we really got of ever achieving anything? Because if none of our good players are going to sign on the dotted line, we're never, ever going to be able to build a project here. And that's the sad fact of the matter. So I am really increasingly becoming concerned with the situation, because while I do have sympathy with, you know, being that stepping stone club, and it's hard to keep players of the ability of Kwame Poku at the club for 4, 5, 6 seasons, I do think we have to get better at getting our good players to stay and wanting to stay. And if we can't, why is that? We need to have a deep research into the reasons. And if we're not going to pay the wages, then what are we going to do? We can't keep saying we're chasing promotion in League One. We have to come to terms with the fact that we're probably battling to survive.
I have concerns as well about how much we promise players when we sign them. We all have heard Barry Fry's line on, sign for Peterborough United, you'll become a millionaire. If he's saying that to every single player that comes in the building, I worry that these players then lose trust in the whole club and the transfer policy, and then feel like they owe the club nothing. And I'm not saying this is what happened with Hector Kyprianou, but he had interest last season from the championship sides, like you said, John. He might well be taking a big signing on fee from one of them championship clubs this summer. Johnson Clark Harris did similar, didn't he? He could have left the season before he did. He stayed on, and then he probably got a big signing on fee. I hope now we're not falling into this trap where players come, they don't get the big money move, they feel aggrieved, and then they do chase the money and they go for the signing on fees, knowing that that's more worthwhile to them. One thing I would say that we probably could adapt to, I hope Archie Collins doesn't mind me saying this, but when I was chatting to him, he said the reason why he joined Posh, obviously Joel Randall was at the club and he sold the club to Archie Collins, but he said he reached out to more than just Joel Randall, players that had played under Darren Ferguson. And he said that every single one of them said the same thing, which was he is a great manager to work for. He's great for development. He has a lot of intelligence on how to improve your game. And I wonder if we should be focused on that. We've got Darren Ferguson. McAntony thinks he's the best manager in the league. We can debate whether he is or not, but we should really be looking at keeping him and utilising his experience with these players. And all of these players that have come through the club and left, the majority of them have played under Darren Ferguson. I think that should be our selling point going forward. Come play for Posh and, yeah, you might become a millionaire, but you still have to work hard and you still have to develop yourself. But you will get to work with Darren Ferguson, who has developed all of these players in the past and done exactly that with them players. If you come and you don't work hard or you have bad attitude and you don't apply yourself, then you will end up like these players that ended up being out the door. Because let's face it, we've got loads and loads and loads of examples of players that have come with a lot of hype and have just never made it in the game. And I bet every single one of them will promise the same thing, that they'd get a big money move if they play well.
Well, speaking of Darren Ferguson and whether he's the best manager in League One, he certainly seemed to have a relatively high opinion of the job that he did this season after the post-match. Now, a quote was that he did a damn good job keeping us in the league. We're just going to dissect those comments relatively quickly, I think, and whether we think Ferguson actually has done a good job this season. Max, what's your view on that? Do you think he's done a credible job, or do you actually think he's bigging up the pudding, over-egging the pudding?
I think we've got to take a look back to the summer to really analyse that question. And we've got to think, how involved is Darren Ferguson in our summer recruitment? And I think that's the most important thing, is that if Darren Ferguson has no input in the transfer window and it's all Dara and Barry Fry, then he's done an absolutely fantastic job to keep this side up. And to me, that's the truth, because I don't think that with the inconsistency of this side to get us to win at Wembley with players that we've openly said on this podcast numerous times probably don't have a League One level at this point in their careers, to win the Cup with this team and losing all of those key players in the summer, basically having a pre-season with an almost fresh 11 is fantastic. However, if Darren Ferguson has as equal amount of input or more input than McAntony and Fry, and it's Fergie who calls the shots on the players, then I don't think it's a good job at all, because he knows the type of caliber of player that he was signing. He knew what he wanted. If it was him that wanted to get the players, then he should have been able to replicate what he did with, well, maybe not replicate it to the extent, because as we've seen, the players from last season were all, you know, Ronnie Edwards went to the Prem, Harrison Burrows has won the team this season in the Championship. I could keep going on and on and on, right? So we're not going to get players of that quality, but he should at least have us in and fighting for playoffs with a team that he's helped build, in my opinion, because he's helped build that team. He's got those transfers that he wanted. He's built his own team. If you build your own team, then I think that's probably where he should have been. If he's the best manager in League One, which Dara says on numerous occasions. And that's no discredit to Fergie, because if you want my opinion, I don't think Fergie has as much pull as Dara and Barry in terms of making transfers. I think actually it's more Fry and McAntony who make the decisions. And to me, I think it probably is a good job. I don't think there's another manager that could galvanise a squad like this and win a cup and in that fashion. I don't. I'm very much on the fence, But I think it's the latter in terms of who got the recruitment. Because if it was Fergie, then if he's built the team that he wants, I don't see why he couldn't have been competing at the top of the table. Well, you know what I mean, for fifth and sixth. I don't see why he couldn't have been competing with that, with the caliber of player that we've lost and the caliber of player that he wants to bring in. I just think that's a different form of argument.
I think Fergie's done a good job. And I think he's also done a good job by his own, how do I put this? He doesn't do well with bad teams. He got Preston relegated. He's got us relegated. He got Doncaster relegated. He doesn't usually see through a season with a crap team. And this is a crap team. Like, yes, we have a couple of really, really good players. Poku is championship quality. There's a few others who are absolutely still, I think, capable of being involved in a League One playoff fight. And indeed, others who have potential to do that, even if they didn't show it this year. But there's a lot of dross. And usually that means relegation. When Fergie's got that in his side, this is the first year he's ever done it, I think, where he's actually kept a side up when the writing was on the wall. Part of the reason that happened is through the January recruitment, which I have no doubt, to Max's point, he did have some involvement in. I believe CJ is one of his signings. Not that CJ is necessarily the reason we've stayed up, but clearly Fergie has some involvement in that, and we need to give him credit there. And lastly, he changed his system. He realised that the 4-2-3-1 that had Joel Randle at the focal point and defenders driving out of, or centre-backs rather, driving out of defence to create space was not possible again this year. And so he went to more like a 4-4-2 with Mothersill playing second striker, and we lost one game in 10 against some pretty good teams, and we played well in those games. That's a sign of a good manager. I was thinking, who are we actually better than? And although there's teams that have finished below us and above us that don't necessarily correlate with how good they are, I genuinely think we are probably the 19th or 20th best team in the league this year. And finishing 18th is therefore a good job.
I think you're quite generous, Harry, if I'm honest. I had a think about this after hearing Fergie say it last night. And I'm not sure he has done a good job. I think when you look at a team that went from sixth to fourth, to 18th, a lot of managers would have lost their jobs in that season. Now, look, there's issues with this squad, and there are big issues with this squad. But I look at the teams we've finished below, and that's Stevenage, Wigan, Exeter, Mansfield. I'd even include a Lincoln City in that. And while I'm not saying Fergie's done a horrendous job or he should have been sacked, I don't know if I can call it a good job. I mean, has he really maximised this squad? When I look at some... Look, he's only had Poku available for half a season, which is an issue. But has he motivated his players? Has he got the most out of them? I know it's difficult because a lot of them are leaving in the summer. I think the answer to that is probably no. When you look at the potential when they were motivated, which was clearly Wembley, they were an excellent football team. And yet, he's fallen out with Bradley Ivonian. And I go back to right early on in the season where we were sort of muddling through games. And I remember the Bristol Rovers game, and I remember him changing his system completely for one game. And from then on, I think his thinking has been a little bit muddled, or at least until the end of that patch after Charlton away, where he decided that, no, this is the end of playing defensive football. So he went from Bristol Rovers, if you remember, and he went kamikaze attack, and we won the game, but we almost lost it in the last 10 minutes or so. After that, we sort of muddled our way through the season, and then we hit a really rough patch, and then he went really defensive. And that defensive football was rotten, and it was horrible, and it was horrible to watch, and we still weren't getting results. We then switched back to our normal style of football, and we got better results, and we kept us up. And what I would give him credit for is after that Bristol Rovers game, I thought we were down, but he managed to turn it around. But over the course of a season, do I think he's made a lot of errors? Yes, I do. Do I think that he maximised the playing ability of his squad? No, I don't. A manager's job is to hide the deficiencies of his team to an extent. and I'm not sure Fergie ever did hide the deficiencies of his team. Set pieces were an issue all season, for instance. That's straight off the training ground. You should be able to coach that, right? And we were the worst team in League One from set pieces. The first 15 minutes of games, we conceded the most goals. Is that a tactical issue or is that a player's focus issue? I'm on the fence about that. But I think there were enough issues with Fergie this season that I certainly wouldn't call it a good job. He kept us up, but I think he's kind of, I'd say he did the bare minimum. And while I have sympathy that the squad wasn't great, I certainly don't think he outperformed the ability of the squad. Anyway, that is the end of the episode. We'd love to hear from you about whether you think Fergie did a good job. I'd love to know whether you're on my side of the fence that he probably didn't, or if you're on Harry's and you think actually he did do a good job and we did well to stay up with the quality that we had. That would be great. Put that in the YouTube comments. Tweet us. Also, if you can subscribe to our YouTube channel, we really appreciate it. We say it every episode, but there are some of you that listen that aren't subscribed. You'll get the videos first. You'll get the notifications. So please do subscribe. It really helps us. And on that note, that's the end of the season. We've got no more games to wrap up, but we will be back with an awards special. Player of the season is going to be tough to vote on given what we've seen, but we will be doing it. We will be back soon. The Poshcast does not stop for pre-season. We are all the way through. Call us Oscar Valin. We're going through another season. We are not tired, though, so don't worry about that. That's the end. Cheers for listening. Up the Poshcast.
Up the Poshcast.
Up the Poshcast.
Up the Poshcast.
Thank you all for listening. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Up the Poshcast. Let us know your feedback. Give us any ideas for topics you would like to discuss or any questions you'd like us to answer. Up the Poshcast. I can't wait for next season. But on that note, I need to go. I need a shit and I need to get the missus. See you soon. Bye.